The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Campus Voices. And this morning, I've got Rachel Evans and Sam O'Donnell in here, and we're going to be having a very interesting discussion about diversity on campus. Rachel?
Both of today's guests, Adam Foley and Jen Daniels, are associate directors of UD's Office of Equity and Inclusion. They are currently leading a series of diversity workshops for university faculty and staff that approach diversity and inclusion from a perspective of which some people may not be aware. Jen and Adam, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we wanted to start off today by kind of explaining to our listeners what these workshops were in case they just weren't aware they were going on or just, you know, really just wanted to give them some background.
Okay, so we have a variety of diversity and inclusion workshops here on campus that really touch on various cornerstones of diversity and inclusion, from cultural competency to how to have difficult conversations about diversity and even intercultural communication. So we really kind of think of our workshop as a A through Z kind of snapshot of what is diversity and what does that mean to the different members of our community.
Yeah, and I think ultimately our goal is to provide those educational opportunities to segments of our own university community that may not have the opportunity to have those conversations. And so we infuse elements of multiculturalism and elements of oppression and understanding what oppression is into the fabric of the various workshops that we present on a regular basis.
So why do you feel it's important for faculty and staff to sort of attend these types of workshops?
Because we're human beings and human beings interact with other human beings. So, right, that's really the condensed version in it. But it's important because at every aspect or every cornerstone of our university involves people engaging difference. We don't live in a society where everyone is exactly the same. We don't go to a university where everyone has the same background or identity. And so we think of this as a great way to prepare you for engaging difference.
And ultimately, it's something that affects all of us. And
yeah.
So I don't care what your job is. I don't care what your background is. I don't care where you're from, where you're going, where you are right now. It's going to have an impact on you in some way because we do interact with individuals on a regular basis. We don't live in isolation, we don't think in isolation, and we don't act in isolation.
Okay, so going forward with these programs, are these more so directed towards students or faculty, or really a combination of both?
I'd say that although we do direct our programs towards faculty and staff, predominantly because there are additional efforts that are coming out of the Division of Student Life that definitely focus on students, our workshops are still open to students, and we very much welcome their participation. And the student perspective very often enriches the conversation because they're bringing in different elements and different backgrounds into the workshops that we host.
Okay. And I also saw that you have a Lead Ally Certificate program. Could you speak about that and how that plays into the workshops?
So essentially, we created a tiered system for our educational offerings, thinking of it with three different components. We have our foundational workshops, which essentially are like your beginner's level. You don't really know anything about diversity and inclusion. Maybe you haven't consumed any information on diversity and inclusion and you need a starting point. Low risk, these are workshops that are not going to make you feel as uncomfortable as we go into some of the various topics, leading into our intermediate and then our more, what's the last foundation?
I think we called it advanced.
Advanced, yeah. Advanced.
We'll go with advanced.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I do know what's going on here. And so we wanted to really incentivize taking the courses, diversity and inclusion, and in a very sequential way to help people really gain the knowledge on the different areas that we're going to be touching on, knowing that it's going to start from kind of low risk, more comfortable conversations to more difficult conversations as we lead into the advanced workshops. So it definitely has helped us with increasing participation across the board. Mm-hmm. We've had, since we started this semester, several completely booked workshops, which has been exciting for us. So, yeah.
And the hope really is that by having folks go through this certificate program, that we're going to have the opportunity to build a cohort of experienced and educated faculty and staff on campus that will then be able to go out into the university community and have more of these conversations themselves with their colleagues and others in their departments and in their units.
Okay. What's the content of these workshops?
So starting out like with our foundational workshops, that would be like the ABCs to diversity. And so we talk about different types of identity groups, breaking down some barriers that those individuals may face, and kind of talking about what the implications are for the classroom or the workspace or just the broader society in general. And then we lead into more topics like bias and where that shows up in the workplace, how that can show up in the conversations we have with people every day and may not be cognizant of, that are conscientious of the things that we're saying and how they impact others. And then leading or finishing with our privilege series, which really touches on different aspects of privilege, what it means, dispelling myths around what it means, and educating people on how they can now take this knowledge and put it into action.
So I guess, can you sort of briefly define for us what exactly privilege is? Because I think it's something everybody like knows what it is, but they don't really know exactly how to succinctly talk about privilege.
Sure. And it really is. It kind of feels like it's that concept that's out in the ether that we hear referenced a lot, but we don't necessarily define. And when we're talking about privilege and having these conversations, we're really talking about these unearned advantages that folks have in their daily lives that are not because of anything they did, not because of anything that they achieved, but merely because of some aspect of their identity. And so it allows them to feel more comfortable in the world around them. And so when we walk into a space, whether that be a classroom or a department store or a college campus, right? We feel differently about that space and how we exist in it. And for some folks, it's just easier to be there because they don't have to think about different aspects of their identity, whereas others are constantly reminded of the fact that they are seen as in some way different.
Yeah, I think also privilege can sometimes be an uncomfortable topic to talk about. So how do you deal with that in your workshops of people who may feel uneasy about being confronted about their own privilege, whether that be, you know, white privilege or male privilege? How do you approach that?
Well, we first try to create an environment where people don't feel condemned or that this is a way of us trying to personally attack people for who they are, because that we don't want anyone walking out of our workshops feeling that way. But we also try to encourage open dialogue and recognizing various aspects of our identity and how we can use that to really help others that may not be as advantaged with their identities and different experiences. So I would say just being open, really, and creating a safe space. And so we do things in a very non-threatening way. We don't want people running out crying or feeling upset about, you know, what we're saying. We really just try to talk about it in a very pragmatic way and one that's palatable and easy for people to understand and digest, really.
Yeah. And we're trying to help people understand that the privilege that we're discussing really happens at the systemic level, right? So we're not talking about individual people going out and intentionally saying, I'm going to make more money than you today, or I'm going to dominate you and have control over you in some way. We're talking about all of these larger systems that are in place in our society that mm-hmm. have an impact on all of us, because we all experience privilege in different ways mm-hmm. at different points in our lives.
The first time I really became aware of this privilege issue was when my son was in high school and the principal fired the German teacher and didn't make a lot of effort to replace the German teacher because he was serving only the privileged few. And he told me that.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. And education is a huge area where privilege comes into play, right? When we think about who has access to different types of education, to the content, to the physical materials and the spaces, right?
And the amount of resource that a public school has.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And it varies vastly. And we we very often kind of make that assumption that everyone has access to a free public education, and we don't stop to consider the fact that what they have access to is vastly different depending on where they live and who they are.
And that it's going to affect you at all levels of your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you hear that concept and people saying, you know, you just need to work harder, or you need to pick yourself up by your bootstraps, and not recognizing that, well, some people don't have bootstraps. Some people don't even have boots. And so when you're saying that all it takes is hard work, particularly when you think about aspects of education and funding, right, for schooling, and how that's based on your zip code and how much money your neighborhood makes is how much money your school is going to be able to fund you per student. Obviously, you can see the disparities in how certain groups of people, depending just on income, will have more opportunity and access to things like higher education and being able to take college prep courses to get into college, and how that affects how much income you're going to have in your adulthood when you're out trying to find jobs and things of that sort. So it's all interconnected and can be cyclic in some ways. And so really trying to point that out, as Adam said earlier, and help mm-hmm. people look at this from a systemic standpoint, as opposed to Adam's a man, I'm a woman, he is oppressing me right now, right? That's how sometimes we can look at that. And that sounds way more contentious, if you will, when in actuality, those are not the dynamics that we're trying to address. It's more so systemic issues.
So just today, we're sitting down with Adam Foley and Jen Daniels, who are both associate directors here at the UD Office of Equity and Inclusion. And we were just talking about how these workshops that they're running are educating people about privilege and bias. And we were just discussing how education really plays into all of that. And sort of going off what you mentioned about how you instruct these sorts of workshops, and I know you're saying you want to make it very digestible for people so they understand, do you still have those people that get very turned off when you immediately start talking about privilege or bias, being like, oh no, like that's not me or anything, like I'm not the problem?
Well, they don't necessarily say it to our face in the workshop. So, you know, we may get a, you know, we do anonymous posts, follow-up surveys where people can write their commentary and mm-hmm. say what they thought or what they didn't like or so on and so forth. And maybe here and there we'll get a couple of comments in that regard. But for the most part, because diversity education on our campus is not mandated, most people that come to our workshops want to get that information and want to be there and realize there's an element of what we're saying that they find to be true. So we don't get too much contention. You know, we prepare ourselves because this was the, like, for example, with the Privilege series, this was our first time going into this since we've both been here. And so we kind of prepped each other like, okay, are you ready? Just if they throw tomatoes, just hit the lights. We're going to run. You know, we're going to get out of here.
Mentally preparing ourselves with the body armor, right?
You know, yeah. we're going to be fine, but we have to talk about this. So, so far, so good. We haven't had any bad experiences. Knock on wood, if you're jinxing me, I'm coming back here to talk to you about this. Right. But other than that, though, you know, it's been pretty good. We've received mm-hmm. really good feedback.
Yeah. If anything, the challenge is going to be how we connect with more of those folks that aren't mm-hmm. initially interested in attending and learning more. And that continues to be central to the work we do, is thinking about how we can reach folks that aren't thinking of it as being relevant to them.
And sort of going off that, you mentioned that these workshops aren't mandatory. Do you think that they should almost be mandatory? Because in my opinion, at least, I feel like people who do go to these workshops are interested in it. They're not the problem necessarily. It's more people mm-hmm. who don't really have an interest in these sorts of topics who could be the problem. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Mm-hmm. And that's a contentious question, to say the least. And when you use the word mandatory with faculty and staff in any
right.
capacity, regardless of whether you're talking about diversity or you're talking about IT
right.
training or you're talking about anything.
You can lead a faculty member to a seminar, but you can't make them take it.
Exactly, exactly. And so really, I think the way that we see these workshops is as an intermediary. In an ideal world, we don't need these workshops because the conversations are happening in all aspect of
right.
an individual's work and educational life. And multiculturalism is being infused into the daily fabric of what we're doing. And that's true whether we're talking about the workplace or we're talking about the multicultural requirement for classes for undergraduate students, right? In an ideal world, there's a component of multiculturalism in your physics class and in your math class and in your English class. And we know that to be the most effective and most salient way of conveying those messages. And so what we're trying to do and hopefully succeeding in to some degree is starting those conversations so that people can take it back to their own personal spaces and think about how they can have those conversations in their own spaces with the work that they're doing.
And speaking about conversations in classrooms, so, you know, I'm a political science major and a women's mm-hmm. studies major, and there's a clear difference in how we talk about things. You know, occasionally in women's studies class, you have someone who's going there for a breath requirement. They kind of just wander in, not expecting to talk about yep. these topics. So sometimes they're a little uncomfortable. So with these topics, how do we get professors of all majors to talk about things that may be uncomfortable, you know, that may not necessarily have to do with chemistry or physics or something like that, but they're important to talk about and that everyone knows? You know, I know I've grown, you know, exponentially for women's studies courses.
Yeah.
So how would we get that incorporated in math or something like that? Maybe not necessarily math, but.
Well, I think first, that's a tough question. But I think first is that people have to understand the value in having those conversations and also understanding that diversity is not just for the social sciences. That's what we can often get. People think, oh, right, if you're doing psychology or you're doing human services of some sort, those are the people that need diversity, and really trying to broaden that and help people understand that no matter what your discipline is, diversity really benefits everyone. And so if we could get people to connect to that idea, I think it would really push individuals, faculty, staff, whomever, really to mm-hmm. be more inclined to have the conversation and to open up the floor and being able to talk about some of these issues and things that are going on within our society or even on the individual level.
Definitely. And yeah. even within my one women's studies class, I had a girl say, "Are you a women's studies major? I've never taken this class before. This is so cool. We're learning all this different stuff."
Mm-hmm.
And on one note, what I did learn is that everyone has privileges and penalties, and that's mm-hmm. kind of keeping on the more individual, personal level.
Sure.
But if we could talk about maybe intersectionality and how that plays a part into your workshops and what you talk about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's, I think, certainly a buzzword that is popping up, and we're having more and more conversations about it. And we certainly infuse conversations of intersectionality into our workshops and helping people understand that when we talk about intersectionality, we're not just talking about the fact that everyone has differences and those differences intersect, but we're talking about how that is affected by the power and privilege that exists in society for some individuals. And so that component of power becomes very important, right, in understanding that it's not just thinking about the fact that my identity is different because I am cisgendered and white and a male, but that also means that I have power in different situations, which impacts the way I behave, it impacts the way I think, it impacts the way I interact with other folks. And so we definitely try and infuse that into the conversations that we have, and it's certainly something that I think we're going to continue to see coming up both in and out of the classroom, and something that is certainly becoming more salient in a lot of feminist scholarship and beyond that.
And to that point, I just want to add on to that, in helping people realize different aspects of their identity and understanding that you can have a privileged identity and you can also have an identity that is disadvantaged. So when I even look at my own self, like, yes, okay, when it comes to ethnicity and being African American, yes, that is an area where I don't have privilege. However, I didn't grow up poor. I grew up middle class family. I never had to struggle financially or economically or worry about how I was going to pay for college or pay to play volleyball or things of that sort. So in that aspect of my identity, I do have privilege, right? And so helping people see those different corners and intersections, as you spoke to earlier, and realize that there's an element in every part of our life where we may have privilege, and how can we use that to help someone else?
Yeah.
So in your workshops, do you emphasize more so personal privileges that you may experience as a, you know, do you allow people to know what they experience?
Well, yeah, we have those conversations. Adam and I are very hands-on with our workshops, so we like to have small group discussions where people can share experiences, people can share what they've been through, what privileges or disadvantages they've experienced directly, and so that others can learn from them, right? You don't know what you don't know. You can't experience what you haven't experienced. So being able to talk with someone that says, hey, this happened to me in my life by way of my identity, and here's how it impacted me. Those are great learning tools for other mm-hmm. individuals who haven't had those experiences. So we really, perspective taking is a big part of our workshops from top to bottom, whether we're starting with the foundations or going into the more advanced topics. We want people to understand a perspective that is different than their own.
Yeah, and it's powerful, right? I mean, Definitely. Sometimes the part of what we're discussing is thinking and helping people think about the having realizations about experiences that they've had, and maybe they don't recognize them as being privileged experiences, but in reality they are, and it just takes somebody else having that conversation and making that point for them to have that aha moment. And we've all had those moments, right, where we mm-hmm. where we realize that, oh, something that happened to us or something that we did, we're seeing it through a new light now because of something that somebody else said.
This morning on Campus Voices, we're speaking with Adam Foley and Jen Daniels, both of them associate directors in UD's Office of Equity and Inclusion.
So earlier you guys mentioned how important it is for people to talk about diversity, whether that's in their work groups, their friend groups, just any sort of group like that. Can you guys touch upon that a little bit more? Like, why are those sorts of conversations important?
Sure, absolutely. I think it's one thing for us to provide information. It's one thing for you to walk into a classroom and receive information, but if we're talking about true multicultural learning, then what we're talking about is being able to make meaning of that knowledge for yourself, right? Because the way in which any of us take in information about privilege, information about race, information about sexism is in part affected by our own experiences and the different aspects of our own identity. And we end up learning so much more when we're able to share those experiences with others and we're able to talk to them and we're able to learn from them because we've all had those different experiences. And sometimes it is just that simple trigger of hearing somebody else's experience to help us realize that, oh, I'm looking at myself in a new way now and I can be more cognizant of that. And it's taking the mirror and looking back at ourselves and reflecting on what that means for us, what that means for our behavior, what that means for the way we communicate, what that means for the relationships that we have with other people that becomes really powerful.
So diversity adds value to the workplace. Mm-hmm. Jen, could you explain that idea to some of our listeners?
Definitely. So when we say that, right, what is the value in diversity? You have to understand when you have people with different backgrounds, they're bringing in different perspectives. And if I'm bringing in diverse perspectives, now I'm bringing in different ways to solve a problem. And so if we have different perspectives and different ways to solve problems, quite simply, that's going to make us more efficient. That's going to make us be able to problem solve at a higher rate. We're going to have a broader scope in being able to reach our audiences, and we're going to have stronger teams. And that's, you know, the Cliff Note version of how we think about it. Diversity is good. If we all thought the same way, if we all looked at things the same way, well, quite simply, you know, we're going to be missing out on a lot of opportunities to be better and to be stronger and to be smarter. So yeah. Diversity is good.
We're not going to get as much done if we don't have it.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just about having a seat at the table, but a voice at the table.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Also, for people who are not sure where to start, they want a seat at the table, but how do they begin? What do you have advice to students or just beginning?
So one of the aspects that we speak about in regard to privilege is once you recognize that you have privilege in a particular area, using that privilege to bring others in, right? Advocating for change, advocating to highlight, right, or propel a voice that may not have been heard readily if it weren't for you being able to be sitting at that table already. So how are you using that, again, to benefit others that are not at the table in that regard? So connections, relationship building, building trust with others is really a great way to get a seat at the table, really, and to mm-hmm. pull others in to the table. Because the more people we have sitting at the table, right, the greater and better access we're going to have to really being able to do things well and get things done.
Yeah. The other reality is that we're incredibly lucky to be at an institution of higher education because these conversations are happening on a daily basis, regardless of the classroom building, regardless of the academic department. There's so much rich and invigorating research that's happening around diversity and multiculturalism. And so looking for those opportunities becomes really important. And I think once we start seeking them out, we discover that there's this network that exists on campus and certainly beyond campus that we then become tapped into that allows us to connect with so many more people and have so many more conversations.
Another thing that I'm especially interested in are those people that maybe just don't understand. We have here from your website saying that we elected a Black president, right? And other things like that, who maybe just don't get it, who think that we're moving forward, or maybe it's just fine where we're at. So what do you say to those people who are not in this coalition of voices, but like where we're at, think it's fine?
It's a tough subject, right? And certainly that was a sentiment that is repeated quite regularly. We've got laws on the books. We can point to a lot of people that have achieved a lot of success. But when we take a step back and when we take a more global view, when we take a higher level view and start to look at the systems that are in place and how those systems, whether it be our educational system or our healthcare system or our prison system, and we start to see how they impact people differently, the statistics don't lie, right? When you look at the averages with regard to rates at which people are incarcerated, when you look at the averages with regards to who's graduating from high school, who's graduating from college, who's going on to graduate school, they don't happen by chance, right? And so they're influenced by all of those pieces.
One thing we're really excited about is that we started moving into a direction of having some online workshops, very similar to podcasts. You can find them on our webpage, udel.edu/OEI. And so we have short 30 to 40 minute workshops for those people that don't have a lot of time and can't come to our typical 60 to 2 hour sometimes workshops. You can still get some of our information in the form of a podcast. So that's something that's brand new for that. So please check that out. And then, of course, we're still accepting applicants for Lead Ally. So feel free to join that. We have tons of workshops and offerings. And lastly, our customizations. Most people are not aware of this, but we are willing to come out to your department, to your classroom, to your organization or unit. If you have a topic that you want us to touch on and you don't see it already slated in our offerings, we will customize and bring something to you free of charge. No, we do not charge you guys money. Can you believe that?
We do accept donations in the form of chocolate or other
baked donuts,
goods.
Things of that sort. That's good too.
Well, I was kind of curious how you guys got involved in this sort of work.
I got my graduate degree in social work. And so I just knew that, you know what, I'm going to be counseling the world and having people sit on my couch and talk to me about what's going on. And then, right, that kind of really manifested into something larger where I wanted to do more meso and macro level work, because I said, yes, working with individuals one-on-one is great, but the best way to really be able to effectuate more change is working with larger groups that can take this information, such as diversity and inclusion, and how do we make our communities better and make sure people are valued and feeling important and connected to our teams. Well, I can do it in a job like this. And so this is how that's been my way of getting around to doing this work. I never saw it in my path, but here I am and I love it.
Yeah. I don't think I ever saw it in my path either. I should be a pediatrician right now.
Exactly.
Clearly things have not worked out that way, right? I think I got started and spending a lot of time having conversations in the residence halls, both as an undergraduate and then working in student life as a hall director. And so I got the chance to have all of these rich individual and group conversations in a more intimate setting, and that transitioned into work in the classroom and work with multicultural education with pre-service teachers and doing a lot of feminist scholarship around multiculturalism and sexuality. And so now I have the privilege and the honor of doing this with faculty, staff, and students on campus on a regular basis.
Thank you so much, Sam and Rachel and Adam and Jen. This has been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.